We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 396. A very merry Hanukkah, a very happy Christmas, and the most important of all Festivus is today as people are listening to this. Got anything to bitch about, Scott?
I think Out of Left Field is becoming like the Festivus segment of our show because it's going to be... I was thinking about different... You know, now I'm walking through life and I generally walk through life as a Larry David anyway. And I just like look to shit on things and like just analyze every single possible thing. But now I got this segment in my head, so now I'm extra looking at things and like making marks to note what I need to bitch at and complain about on the next episode.
I have a notes. I have like a draft note in my phone where if I see something or think about something, I put down the topic just so I don't forget about it.
So I got another one this week. I know we're going with this one, and it involves Carl, of course. You know, the guy, the bane of my existence.
Yes,
Carl. So
looking forward to that.
We'll talk about it at the end.
Well, how's it going? I know you're on the road visiting some family.
It's good, man. I'm in Irvington, just at my sister's place. All of my family's coming here, so we're here for, you know, the extended the week. Really, it's just been kind of crazy. So we're going around doing holiday parties with family stuff, and I'll be in Central Jersey for a little bit. I'm doing the tri-state tour essentially. That's what happens during the holidays. We go around and
bounce around
different family members' houses. So
yeah. Yeah. And we're going to try and, because I have the week off, you're going to be up here for work. So we're going to try and link up later this week and hopefully have a kind of a little bit of a different episode for everyone, recording in the same person, which out of 396 episodes, maybe we've done 10 times, right? Well, I guess all the game recaps, but non-game recap playoff games. It's been few and far between. Let's start with the Cole press conference takeaways. This was
perfect.
I saw some.
This was perfect.
I saw headlines. Gerrit Cole's first big Yankee moment. And while I am so excited for Gerrit Cole, and as you said, the press conference was perfect, I don't know if I'm going to go that far.
Well, I mean, he's only had this moment. So
his first moment, and it went well.
If we're
going to
talk about a moment that Gerrit Cole has had as a New York Yankee, yes, he's one for one. It's gone well. I mean, honestly. That press conference was probably everything you could possibly think. You know, you have like the premier free agent up there with his beautiful wife, and they're giving him gifts, and
she is something else.
And they are, you know, they just look like the perfect couple coming into New York with the whole, obviously, like the record contract. Everything he said was good. He had a nostalgia piece with the sign that I know we'll get into. He had. You know, talking about the gifts that were given. There was just a lot of information.
We never covered that. That was pretty crazy, the stuff the Yankees...
A lot of personal things, a lot of personal touches.
The wine that he got, it was Italian vintage wines that were between $800 and $900 a bottle.
Yep.
Apparently, the way they knew that he liked those specific wines was the visiting clubhouse attendant somehow knew about a trip he took with his wife to Italy.
They became chummy. Like when Cole was here, they became chummy and we're talking a bunch. And I was talking with my cousin Dave today about this. I mean, he was like, how did they know? And then he's like, oh yeah, I had a conversation with that dude. So yeah, they became
friendly.
But
would it put it past you for the Yankees to send out spies to try and figure out what the players they actually want? Because that's one thing I think we learned.
What do you think the clubhouse attendant was doing?
That's true. But haven't you noticed the difference between what we've all heard about everything the Yankees did in the run-up to Cole signing versus their, quote, pursuit of Patrick Corbin or any other free agents in recent years? I mean, it is night and day what they did.
It's very clear.
They're getting down on their knees for Gerrit Cole, for God's sake. Not just checkbook, but the Italian vintage wines.
It's all stops. They had their guy. They located their guy. They identified their guy. Last year, obviously, it wasn't Corbin. If Corbin fell into their lap, they would have taken Corbin, and they would have given him the contract that they felt comfortable with.
Right.
It's very clear that they've been coveting, and they have coveted. I mean, we've known this, right? They drafted the guy.
They tried to trade for him from
Pittsburgh.
Did they really try and trade for him?
Whatever. There were talks. There was definitely interest there. And yeah. now we have a third. There's a third opportunity where there's nobody in the way. It's just about making.
Cashman called him his white whale.
Making the offer that he cannot refuse. And that was what they did. And they buttered him up beautifully ahead of time.
So if.
And who knows? Who knew that that son of a bitch was holding that damn sign the whole time? I love it.
So do you buy. There's sign controversy.
There's no sign
because
controversy.
Because the sign was from lunatics. 2001.
Yeah.
He was at the 01 World Series with the Yankees fan today, tomorrow, forever sign.
Yes.
And obviously back then it was blue and it had some pinstripes on it, but he said it was in his parents' house and it just faded over time. And some people were calling bullshit on it. I don't know. I was in a meeting.
I'm rolling my eyes as far as they can roll.
The press conference was last Wednesday morning, I believe, right?
Yeah.
At like 11 o'clock in the morning.
Correct.
I was in a meeting at work, so I was not able to watch it or listen to it live. Then I come back to my desk, and the whole thing's over, and I'm just scrolling through Twitter, and I see the picture of the Yankees fan today. And I'm like, wow, did they really – like that struck me as like, oh, did Brian Cashman give that to him? Did Randy Levine give that to him? Did Hal Steinbrenner give that to him? Like show up with like a fake sign made up. I was like, that's kind of cheesy if they did that. And then I found out that he brought it with him and I was all the way in on it.
Yeah, that's the sign, man. First of all, if you look closely on it, you can see the faded pinstripes in the back too. It's definitely the sign. Things
what if
fade.
He's just so
it's
diabolical that
old.
he made it to
what's
look.
What's he doing?
Faded.
Getting like what you do like, in like fourth grade? You get tea bags and you like put it all over the. No.
Yeah, to make the edges look old, or like if you're faking a note from your mom to like get out of fifth grade, you like crinkle it because like no one's gonna put. Just, that's what's the, remember that trick from Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio was like fold the note, crumple it up, put it in your pocket because what is the first thing you do when you get a note? I don't know where I'm going with
the
this.
The thing is. First
sign
of all,
gate.
It also faded to like a yellowish gold almost.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people would predict that that would fade to a yellowish gold. Like it doesn't, if I'm
how
thinking
does that happen?
In my head, I'm thinking it goes to red or pink, right? A blue would fade to like a pink.
What are the
yellow.
Colors that make blue? Green, yellow, and I don't remember. Purple?
Roy G. Biv, man. There's only so many of them.
I want that purple stuff. Anyway, yeah, he had some good quotes. Pressure is a privilege. That's got to get you jacked up too, because there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. He's the guy. He is the guy.
He's the guy, but he also he doesn't care. He loves it. He loves it.
Oh,
pressure is a privilege.
Yes, and I think we've seen guys come to New York, obviously recently, but other big name players come to New York who have had Hall of Fame careers elsewhere. And cannot handle the pressure in New York. Randy Johnson, I know he was past 40 at the time, but he was coming off like four consecutive Cy Young seasons in Arizona. He came to New York and just could not friggin' handle it.
It was a different scenario too. I mean, I think when you see where he was in his career, where Gerrit Cole is in his career, what Gerrit Cole has, just the type of makeup. Randy Johnson was kind of a lunatic. He was a crazy man. With with a mullet that stood 6'10" and wiry as hell, he was a guy that was out there. He threw at birds, you know. There were things that were happening with him that were not right, and you know I could see how you could be a little off kilter when you're Randy Johnson. Gerrit Cole is built for this. This man is built for this. He went through this press conference beautifully, delivered every possible thing. The man even teared up talking about the sign. And being there, that he's always here. I've always been here. Like, what do we? This is like a Disney movie.
It's like Scott Boras gave him a checklist of things to get into the press conference. Tear up a little bit. Bring the sign. Talk about how you can't wait for the pressure. Boom, boom, boom.
No,
checked all the boxes.
None of that matters because he already got paid. He got there. He's landed on the top. What I really like about this whole thing is that it absolutely seemed and looked and felt absolutely 1,000% genuine. And when that guy is up there talking about this with the sign that he was almost a little embarrassed to bring up there, I could see his wife like having like a smirky, like, I can't believe you're doing this. We've talked about this. Like, I said no. Like, it's not a great look for your image. You're trying to be like a bad guy or like a bad boy on the mound. Like, the number one ace, probably not the best. He's like, you know what?
Yeah.
This is from the heart. This is how I feel. I know these people. I'm going to do this. And I love it because it was genuine. You could see a little misty eye. You could see a little thing going on with the eyes. The man absolutely wants to be a New York Yankee. Like, this is the scenario that we've all dreamed about. the guy who's the fan who found the Yankee cap that we talk about in free agency, but actually does want to play for the team, and that was his dream.
Well, what is we've talked about this, where what is one thing that we as fans always appreciate in a player, and it's just own your mistakes.
Honesty.
Own if you suck.
Honesty.
But be genuine. So this sort of, I know it's a little bit different, but it falls in that same bucket. Be yourself. You just signed $324 million contract to play for the most famous baseball team in the world. You can get teared up. You can get friggin' excited, because every one of us, like you just said, sitting at home would kill to be in that exact same spot. And yeah, if we had a sign, if I ever ended up signing with the New York Yankees, I'd probably be bringing relics from my past too, talking about how I watched games with my dad, the 1996 World Series. Like, that's one of the first memories I have of watching baseball. Like, all that kind of corny shit.
You'd be the first person that ever signed and had a press conference wearing a bucket hat.
Yeah, I would. It was my grandfather, so you can't make fun of it. The that kind of corny stuff, when it comes to this situation, a press conference, that plays.
It plays, but and that's the thing. Like, it plays because it's real. And it's not like he was looking for something to plays. He just wanted to do this. And he wanted to show everybody that this is what he was. And this is not just a signing. This is, yes, it's a ton of money. And yes, they offered the most. All of that, absolutely. That was a huge part of it, if not most of it. But at the same time, this was a dream of his that he is now fulfilling. And
did you also hear about the thing that he got that has like a bunch of Yankees history on an iPad, but it's in like this really elaborate interlocking NY case?
It was the size of a home plate. And it was a massive, it was a massive gift that they sent. They went through all
and
the,
apparently
the
they
things.
Only, but no. So apparently this is a very rare gift that only select few people have gotten.
Okay. That's awesome.
So maybe CC Sabathia has gotten it. Maybe Mark Teixeira has, like, these big ticket $150 million plus contracts, you're going to be here for the rest of your career type players.
Right. Yeah, no, it's cool. They did not stop short of anything. They went all in with all the little custom details, and that stuff goes a long way, I think. I think it goes a long way to showing a player that you do truly care. You're looking at the details. You're looking for the small things that, you know, maybe other teams are not looking for and identifying. And not only that, but yes, you're going to pay him the most money. So
yeah,
you knock all of these things out of the park. You knock the nostalgia part with the person, and then you pay the man, and then everything falls suit, and that's what happened.
Paid the man his money.
And Cashman got his boy.
And we found out a previously unreported detail on how Cole's contract can become 10 years. If he opts out after the fifth year, the Yankees can void it. And what they do in voiding it is that locks them into a 10th year on the back end for another $36 million, which would bring the total contract to 10 years, $360 million.
Yeah.
Cole will be 34 years old at the point of the opt-out. It's an opt-out at year five.
Right? That's year five.
It's an opt-out after year five. So it's very unlikely we're going to see what happened with Sabathia, where Sabathia had one after year three. And he put together three all-star caliber World Series, you know, a World Series winner, plus all-star caliber seasons, and it was only 3 years, and he was still at an age where he could have some leverage. I don't see Cole having that much leverage at 34 years old on the free agent market unless we have a situation like the mid-90s again, where you can sign Randy Johnson at 36 years old and he can win four straight Cy Youngs
because here's the thing. Here's the thing. When you are 34 years old, what kind of a contract are you going to get? Are you going to get a five-year deal? Are you going to get a four-year deal? Because at that point, you're looking at $36 million for over 4 years each year. And then if the Yankees were to pick it up, if everything went well, that's you're 39 years old. Like, it's a no-brainer for Gerrit Cole, 100%. Like, it's an unbelievable deal.
So if he opts out, he would need to get at least a four-year, $144 million contract on the open market to beat what the Yankees are already paying him. So the only way I could see him opting out is if things go awry and it's a disastrous 5 years for whatever reason.
Oh, you mean like off the field, on the field, like everything's just bad?
Everything's bad. The Yankees don't win a championship. Cole is underperforming. Fans hate him. Everything's bad. His wife is like, we need to get the hell out of here.
Why in the hell would he opt out of it if that's the case?
because you've already banked so much money that sometimes it's not worth hating your life.
It's $150 million.
It might not be worth hating
his
life. It's
$150 million. You're not have to, if things are going badly.
So then what is the point of the opt-out?
That's the point.
What is the point?
The point of it is that the player has an opportunity to capitalize on his success.
Well, then he should have asked for it after year three or four. Maybe he did, and he didn't get it.
Maybe he did, but
a player opt-out at 34 years old.
Nobody's giving those contracts out.
An opt-out at 34 years old does not give the player much leverage. So if it was at 32, I could see that being a lot of leverage because that's what Steven Strasburg was going into his 32-year-old season, and he got
what leverage? I don't know what leverage you're looking for. What's he leveraging for what?
Nothing. More money, more years.
Nothing with the Yankees.
Yeah, it's leverage. CC Sabathia had leverage with the Yankees. He strong-armed them into giving him another year on his contract.
Yo, you're saying the leverage is gone at the 5 years, and that's yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I agree with that. Yes, I misunderstood what you said. I got you, but no, that's true because at 3 years now you have a little bit more because there's actually a real opportunity that you may leave. 5 years,
right.
Probably not happening.
It's slim.
You're in.
In fact, say the Yankees get five really good seasons out of Cole and they win one or two World Series. I bet there's a lot of people inside the Yankees who would be like, I hope he opts out and we get out of these last 4 years and then this contract's going to look friggin' beautiful.
Unless he's still really good and they just keep it going.
But. So he shows up clean shaven with the trimmed haircut. And I put out a Twitter poll on Yankees podcast asking because I said, do you like the Yankees hair policy? 5,500 people voted. 62% like the hair policy.
Did you say 5,500 people?
Yeah, 5,500
okay.
People.
Okay.
Why?
I thought you meant 5,000 and a half person. I'm not hearing you. I'm not hearing you right today.
My brain is not working great. I did have a Hanukkah party last night, and it got lit, pun intended. But, 5,500.
Okay, I got you.
5,500.
All right.
62% of those people like the Yankees hair policy. I figured we'd gotten to a point in time, like you and I are sitting here talking, we both have beards. We could not play for the New York Yankees for a number of reasons, one of them being our facial hair.
But that's not the reason you can't play for it, because you just have to do it. You just have to accommodate it.
I feel like I figured we'd gotten to a point in society where people are over this kind of thing. And a lot of people commented saying, I don't like it, but... Or they said, they said, I like it, but I wish that the Yankees allowed for like properly manicured beards, not like these crazy.
There's a gray area there.
Who was that closer from the Giants? Remember him?
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Or like how Jabba Chamberlain looked the last couple years of his career. Looked like a woolly mammoth.
Like a homeless guy. What the hell was his name? Look, there are certain jobs where you have to look a certain way. It is what it is. And this is just one of them where you have to look a certain way. And if you want to work for that company or play for that team, it is what it is.
So you like it?
It's fine.
It's stupid.
I think it's fine.
Okay.
Some things they do, it's tradition. It's like the pinstripe thing. Like people were all pissed off at a tweet I sent out and I'm like, about the Nike symbol. I'm really just talking about the branding. I'm not even talking about the fact that it's on the jersey. But people don't realize, nobody, because I think there's two things a lot of people are bitching about the Nike swoosh on the jersey. The fact that it's there, period. A lot of people are bitching about that. And the other half that are bitching about the placement of said new Nike swoosh. Well, I'm looking at, when I was looking at just pictures and I was looking back at like some of the team photos, the team issued photos for the actual New York Yankees, a couple years, most of the guys were wearing the black undershirt or the navy undershirt with the swoosh in between in the neck. And you know what? I understand that that's not part of the jersey itself, but it is part of the uniform. It's still part of the uniform itself. And it's front and center. It's right there, right in your face as much as you can. I think people just have a problem with it touching the pinstripes, period.
Yeah, it looks weird, though, because not every home jersey has pinstripes. There's plenty of just plain white home jerseys, and I've seen pictures of it, and the Nike symbol looks less weird when it doesn't have pinstripes. Because from an eyesore type thing, it doesn't look good. I think that's what that's what people have a problem with. Like it no longer looks good because it's like crisscrossing with the symbol.
But it's also... I don't know. I don't really believe that.
Where would you put it though? Where would you put it? Like you design t-shirts. Where would you put it? Because I feel like it would look better on the sleeve.
But the whole point of the sleeve is that it's not front and center, so they're not getting the same brand
it's
look.
It's still pretty front and center with baseball, considering you're always facing that way.
So you got to put it on
a left-handed or a right-handed batter. Or if a pitcher, like, you could still see it on the sleeve pretty damn well.
It's not the same. It's not as on the front of the body where it's constantly going to be shown. How many times when they're running bases or when the camera's on them, you're seeing the front of the person.
Yeah.
When they're playing defense, the front of the person. It's always there. That's obviously the dominant side. As soon as the new era logo went on the hat, you knew this was coming. And everybody's talking about, well, the next phase is get these advertisers and it's going to look like, you know, a Chinese basketball league. I mean, I don't know when it's
NASCAR.
If it comes down to that.
It's going
to
be like NASCAR on your jersey.
I don't know if it's going to come down to that or when. I mean, you know, things trend in a way. And obviously, it's you look at what it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago. It's a hell of a lot further now as far as the logos. But it is still the manufacturer of the garment. It's not a separate sponsor. Basketball is throwing up separate sponsors now. They're putting them on the jerseys. This one's
I know
still
this would,
the garment, like the manufacturer of the actual jersey. So it used to be on the
never,
bottom. Some of it would have been on the sleeve.
Yeah. This would never happen, but would you accept product placement on the jersey if it took out like a minute of commercials?
No,
so
because,
games move faster,
the time of the baseball game doesn't bother me. And when you're, especially when you're doing something small like that. So if that were the
but if you could trim down 15 plus minutes of every game just by eliminating commercial breaks, that's not the number one way that baseball
needs to fix
the pace of play. But it is, and it would never happen because the owners would just be like, well, let's keep the 2 minute commercials plus have the jersey logos and make more money.
Well,
so I know it would never happen.
I still think there's better ways to condense it. If you're looking at ways to do it, you can still do in game ads on television.
They've started doing those.
They need to do more of that if that's what they want to do and they want to shave some stuff off. I don't think it has really much to do with the actual the commercial time as much. But the other thing is when you're looking at the jerseys themselves and like getting down that road, it's inevitable. Like I have realized that in my life at this point, I deal with like I have to look at it's impossible for me to look at something and not like see if it's realistic or not, or have an expectation of something and then not have that go into my mind with how I feel about what, like the Nike swoosh. I fully expected it to be on the jersey, fully expected it to be at a place where the brand is prominent. So, you know, that probably goes into the fact that it doesn't bother me because I expected it. And, you know, I guess people who don't like it, they just don't like it, period. And fine, that's great. You're entitled to your opinion. It just doesn't bother me. I'm not saying I like it. I don't like it, but it doesn't bother me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things that's just another thing for people to get mad online about.
Yeah, I got plenty of shit to get mad about.
That's not going to be one of them. Mad about. Some Yankees news to just run through. So the corresponding 40-man move for Gerrit Cole was to DFA Chance Adams. And he had been, at one point, I want to say 3 years ago, in the Yankees' top 10 prospects. And
rising quickly.
In 2017, if you remember, we did a lot of talk about, are the Yankees going to call up Chance Adams and give him a shot in the starting rotation this year, meaning 2017, because the staff was struggling. Like, that was a real thing for a couple years. And now here we are in 2000, after a couple years later, he's getting designated for assignment. I'd be shocked if no one picks him up.
Yeah, I mean, he flew through the system when he switched over. He came out of college as a reliever and then started working with the Yankees and became a starting pitcher. But when he made that change too, like, he excelled quickly through the minor league system. So I think people saw what it was. But he definitely got to AAA and you started seeing some warts. You started seeing the control issues that are a lot more prevalent. You know, you have more patient batters, the stuff wasn't playing as well. So I think that there's still potential. That there was a lot of like chirping too once Matt Blake, I feel like I want to screw up his name on purpose every time I say it, actually, because of Joel Sherman. But when
it's
Matt,
almost too easy of a name that it's easy to mess up.
Yeah. When he got hired, there were a lot of people talking about Chance Adams could be one of those guys that could really benefit from a guy like Blake.
Yeah, Blake could find something in his delivery or,
well, his
or
spin
something.
Rate's,
with
his spin rate's good.
His spin rate is good, yeah. So he could find something to really make him flourish. So I don't know. Maybe he's not gone. Maybe he ends up back with the Yankees.
I'd be surprised too if he took an assignment and wasn't a claim. But yeah, I was surprised when I saw that because of all the chirping. Usually when there's chirping like that, you start seeing you see something about it, or you know, maybe it's like somebody leaked that was a topic of conversation at one point. I don't know. But I was surprised.
Well, I expected him along with Michael King and Luis Sessa to be sort of in that sixth, seventh starter depth piece for this year.
Sessa's proved a hell of a lot more than Chance Adams.
Okay, he's in the same, but in that sort of, in that group of guys, I'm not saying he'd get the shot over Sessa. I think Sessa's going to be on the 26-man roster in the bullpen, and if they need a spot, start him. But I don't know. I saw Adams as a guy that could get a couple starts for one reason or another. You got a doubleheader to play. This guy's on the IL for 15 days. You know, just a million
maybe
different random scenarios.
But the thing is that what Chance Adams showed
last
year.
He did a couple. He came in relief to be the bridge. I'm already forgetting what it's called.
Oh, let's forget it forever. I'm not even going to tell you because I don't want it to stick. I don't want any opener scenarios to stick.
No, the opener. What was the guy that came in after the opener? What did they call him?
I don't know, the next reliever that came in after the opener. I'm sick of all these names. I'm not even going to justify it. Yeah. Look, the thing is that he definitely showed that those command issues weren't gone. And like he wasn't really improving like they wanted him to improve, I think. And he was nothing special when he came up to the major leagues. Like he was getting shelled left and right. So
he had one start.
You can add guys in there. You can add guys in there. He pitched well in relief one day.
Do you remember that Boston start?
It was
though?
Against Boston, yeah.
Was it a start or relief where he pitched like five innings and did pretty well?
I think
well.
It was in relief.
Was like, oh, maybe this is gonna be something to get him going, and it just never happened.
If I remember correctly, I think it was in that Nestor Cortez role where he came in second and just he ate. Well, it was also a gutsy.
No, I thought it was 2018.
They needed a performance out of a guy like that to eat some innings, and he came in and did it. But overall, wasn't what they expected. So,
yeah. Yeah, and there's some other rumors that the Yankees are looking for infield flexibility. And I know we have a mailbag question about this. Joe Panic has been mentioned. Brandon Belt has been mentioned. These are left-handed hitting infielders. Belt's a first baseman.
Panic's a second baseman, though, right?
Yeah. So he would sort of be the. Yeah, he would allow.
I don't understand
LeMahieu,
that.
Well, he would allow LeMahieu to go play third base or first base if he needs to.
This doesn't make sense to me. So when we're looking at, and why don't we read the mailbag now, actually, because this is the conversation. When you're looking at what's currently on the roster, obviously things can change with trades, which I still think there's going to a trade or two is going to happen because the way that the roster is shaping out just doesn't make a lot of sense. Andujar plays third base. Andujar theoretically could play first base. You have LeMahieu playing first base, second base, third base, Gio starting third base, right?
And said he could play second base.
Okay, fine, second base. There's one guy for shortstop. One. So why would you bring in another guy that could play second base?
So the question is from Rob. Everyone keeps talking about the infield flexibility we have, but God forbid Glaber gets injured next year. What is our shortstop coverage? Do we think Tyler Wade could step up, or is he a better option to shift, or is it a better option to shift DJ or Gio around the infield? And you just said, what's the guy? It's shortstop is really the issue that we don't have a backup shortstop other than Tyler Wade currently.
In the organization, it's Tyler Wade.
He's a good defensive player.
A very good. No, he's not just a good. He's a very good defensive player.
So Wade was called up. He bounced around last year, but he was called up on August 21st last year and stayed up for the remainder of the season. In that time, he played in 22 games, and he started 12 games, and he had 47 plate appearances, and he slashed .279, .340, .465. And that's in sporadic playing time, .279, .340. The number I'm looking at is .340, .340 on base percentage. If Tyler Wade can get on base 34% of the time in a sporadic utility type role with his speed, that is That is really good. That is very useful if he can do that.
Absolutely. And he plays a hell of a he has a good glove that not only can play shortstop, but it can play every single infield spot. Probably put him at first if needed to, but probably don't need to. And he can go shift out to the outfield and play any position in the outfield. So, you know, I've been touting this. If you're a listener of the show for a while, you know I've been on the Tyler Wade bandwagon for a while because of the flexibility, because of the player. And you know, for me, in the beginning of last season, when the argument was, well, he can't add anything to this team with his offense, like nothing offensively is helping. And my answer to that was, I didn't care. That's not his role. His role at that point, if you're the last guy on the bench, is to add that flexibility on the defensive side to be able to go in there and swipe a base if need be. And, you know, maybe lay down a bunt, things like that. Like, I'm not looking for a lot of offense out of that guy. And now the fact that he came up at the end of last year and had, you know, a very good offensive showing, much better than he ever has in the major leagues.
Oh, God, that's night and day. Yeah. He was completely overmatched for most of his at-bats prior to that last call-up.
If this is
where we always said, okay, yeah, you can live with, like, average offense, but just don't be a complete black hole in the lineup where he couldn't get on base.
If this is progression, if this is player progression, and he's learned how to, you know, tailor his game, because he's always been a good minor league player and he's always hit in the minor leagues too. If he's able to tailor his game,
it's been like, oh, he's a quad A player.
Yeah, but only on offense. Everywhere else, he's been fine. Yeah. Because if you and there's other facets of the game besides offense, a lot of people don't freaking care about
that. Yeah, but that's defense.
This team defense does. This team scores a lot of runs. There's an absolute value for run prevention and some of the small stuff that some of this team does not know how to do. Point being, if this is actual progression and this is him adjusting to a new role and the role that he now knows he's going to be in, where he's going to be coming off the bench playing sporadically and he can actually perform offensively in that role in the major leagues as well, he's an extremely valuable player on this team and absolutely would be the backup shortstop at that point to me and then be able to float all over the place.
Joe Panik had 461 plate appearances in 2019 with San Fran and the Mets. He hit .244, .315, .336. That's a 76 WRC+. Do you think if Tyler Wade got 400-plus plate appearances, he would do better than a 76 WRC+, which is about, it's 24% below league average?
Yeah. Again, if we're looking at what he did at the end of last year as progression, as player progression, maturation from a player, being able to adjust his game to what his situation is on the team, because I think that's a big deal, then yes, of course I do. I think he could do that. And he's a much better defensive player. And he's a much better
base
runner.
Much better. So Panik has won a gold glove in the past. But
Tyler Wade plays five positions.
And Tyler Wade is on your roster already, and he's league minimum.
And he's how old is Panik? 32? 33?
Yeah.
Tyler Wade's what, 25, 26? 27? I mean, 20s?
Yeah,
mid-20s?
Doesn't matter at this point. 30, Joe Panik.
Okay. So five years younger than him, give or take.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is kind of interesting. These rumors, I don't know if it's how true these rumors are, but about the Yankees looking for a left-handed bat. Joe Panik, you're not going to be getting him because he's a left-handed bat. He's not a good offensive player, so who gives a shit if he hits left-handed? I don't want him hitting.
You know what I mean? That's the type of guy. The guy that you add in that place, whoever that place, that person is, whether it's coming from internally at, you know, and winning the job in spring, or you bring in somebody who wins that job, that person has to fit. That person has to be a cog in the machine. And if you're not a cog in the machine and you don't fit in multiple places and you're able to help out, then I don't know what use you have. You're now handcuffing us as a guy. We already have we have a log jam at first base. Luke Voit and then whomever else. These guys can't play anywhere else. So why would we bring in a guy that really just primarily plays second base when we have 1, 2, 3 people that can play second base right now? Four, Tyler Wade.
And if you get into a scenario, and I don't know how often this comes up in the regular season, but let's just like play down the road to the 2020 playoffs, and you want to go super defense in the infield because it's the eighth inning and you've got a one-run lead. You could, in theory, put Tyler Wade at second base and move DJ to first base if you want to pull Voit because he's not a good defender.
Sure.
So.
Sure. I mean, yeah, you could do that. You could absolutely. You could put Tyler Wade at short. You could put Glaber at second. You can do a number of things.
Well,
the key is it adds flexibility.
And Eric Kratz is back with the Yankees. The Yankees signed him to a minor league deal. He's been in the Yankee system before. I know Martin Maldonado was rumored because of the Cole connection, but he signed a 2-year, $7 million deal with the Astros. The Yankees were never going to spend that much money on a backup catcher, especially when it seems like they like Higgy. We got pretty in-depth about Higgy on the last episode. But this Kratz move is complete insurance for 40-man roster.
Kratz is a very good receiver of the ball. He's got that reputation. He's 39 years old, I think.
Yeah, he's going to be 40 next season.
Yeah, so he's one of those guys that is, you know, he's been around the block, obviously. He's been with the Yankees. There's nothing there offensively. He's a guy that can handle the staff fine. I think he's like another, you're adding like another coach on the field type guy. So it is absolutely an insurance move in case Higgy is no good. And they've been talking about Higgy a lot this week too, about building him up and like he's the guy that they're going to give a shot to. And they're excited.
All of the guys with information are tweeting that the job is basically his.
Yes.
They're not, they haven't said that, but that what they've said is
they've essentially
with Higgy,
said that Cashman is pretty
with
much
Higgy
said that.
At backup catcher. So it's sort of like it's an assumption or it's a known assumption within the organization, within the people who know what's going on there, that Higgy is going to be the backup to start.
Whether the actual words came out of Brian Cashman's mouth, he essentially has said it.
Matt Kraus was the strength coach, and he was fired after 6 years with the team. How do you think that conversation went?
do you see how many people hit the IL?
It's like you go in for your annual review.
Just bye.
Right? Because this is it's December. It's annual review time. I'm sure anyone out there in a corporate job has gotten that meeting put on their calendar. They have to do their self-assessment. What do you think Kraus? How do you think Kraus assessed his performance over the past year? It's like, no shit, you're getting fired, dude.
Like the thing that you know I've talked about in the past too is like I don't think one guy is responsible for all this stuff. Obviously,
of course not.
But there needs to be a system of balances, checks and balances, and what these guys are doing in the off season. I think more just making sure that they are doing the appropriate things that they need to be doing, because everybody goes off and does their own thing with their own guys, and they're all working on, you know, probably different tactics, different strategies in order to stay limber and healthy and strong and all these things and eat well and whatever. So, you know, I don't know how they are or how fast they're going to be doing this. I would hope relatively quickly so everybody can get on the same page. Seems like it's a little late to do that, honestly. Like I would have already wanted this plan in place with some of these guys. So, you know, maybe there's somebody internally that's going to take it over, which again, also a little head scratching because now it's kind of the same system. But, I think the system is flawed, personally. Like, the system is flawed, and they need to figure that out.
I mean, you had 39 players, or 30 players make 39 different IL stints last year. And it was, I mean, such a glaring issue on the team. The whole thing needs to be looked at. The Yankees would not be doing their job. Brian Cashman and the management would not be doing their job if they did not reassess and try and do better at that portion of the team. Because it's clearly a weakness. Like, how could you not change the system? It's not working. It didn't work last year. They had guys go down, and they didn't get healthy. Like, change it.
Yeah, no.
I don't know what the answer is, but it's not what they did.
I don't know. I don't have the answer for it. I don't know what to tell you. Just how about we stretch more?
That's important.
How about no more soft tissue injuries?
Stretch before you get on those long cross country flights in those cramped seats.
Let's improve the flying situation. Get some pods. Let's go.
You think it's weightlifting?
Could be the pods. I don't think there's an answer to this, honestly. There's so many
weightlifting. You think weightlifting? Because a lot of old players have said that there's more injuries in baseball because of their weightlifting habits.
I mean, maybe. I mean, you look back
in season weightlifting habits.
Look, all I know is you look back in the day at some of the guys that used to play baseball, and none of them lifted weights. They all were just like country strong. They wouldn't lift during the season. The majority of them.
Yeah, I think they wouldn't lift weights, but not
very much. A lot of them didn't lift weights. A lot of them were real. Like Joe DiMaggio, did he ever pick up a freaking weight in his life?
Yeah,
I don't think so. Doesn't really look like it. The guy was just naturally talented. Had a limber a physique to go.
If you believe Pete Rose, he lifted a weight every day.
Okay.
You don't know what
I'm picking down what you're, yeah, I understand.
All right, you ready to get into some mailbag questions? We have a few good questions, and I think they're going to be taking a little while because there's some doozies in here. First one is from Robin Lett, who has submitted before. He says, hey, guys, it's now been 3.5 years since Aaron Judge came up, and he's yet to have his first walk-off moment. Not necessarily a big deal, right? Obviously, you've got to be in the right place at the right time. But Judge has a career average of 196 in the ninth inning and 095 in extra innings. This is 50 points lower than any other inning, which led me to ask the question, does the great man lack a, quote, clutch gene? So I opened up email, and I saw this email, and I got a big smile on my face because it was. I think this was sent on the day that Garrett Cole press conference. And we're getting his Aaron Judge clutch emails. Beautiful.
Look. Yeah, he's clutch. I love him. I love him. He's clutch. I trust in him fully. There's just so many things you could say about this. I know we have the numbers to talk about what he is. And
I actually first want to ask you, what do you consider clutch? I am more statistically, you know, new age statistics than you are, but I still believe in clutch. But I'm curious what you think clutch is. What do you consider clutch?
In a big moment, in a pressure situation, coming through for the team in a big moment. It's doing your job.
Don't you agree that can be a little random, right?
It is random. It absolutely is random. But you start looking at, like, for instance, Didi would. It's seemingly in these big moments when the team was down and out or we needed something in a big playoff situation, he would come up and knock it out. But were there times that he failed? Yes, there are definitely times that he failed. So when you're looking at the clutch gene and we're looking at the people who are clutch and the guys that have those big hits, do you just remember those and not remember the other times? Probably. There's probably an element of that.
Didi
as well.
Did have big playoff home runs. To the wild card home run against the Twins, the grand slam this past season against the Twins, and the two homers off of Corey Kluber. But if you look at his postseason statistics, they're worse than his regular season statistics.
Yeah.
So was he just clutch in those specific at-bats when the Yankees needed him to hit a home run? Or was it just he happened to come through then and just like it's going to even out?
That's the thing.
Because here's what I'm getting at. Clutch to me does not mean that you hit 400 with runners in scoring position because that's not sustainable if you're not a 400 hitter, and no one is a 400 hitter. So clutch to me is you perform the same when there's high pressure as when there's no pressure.
How is that clutch?
Because you don't let pressure affect your game. You perform the same that you're always going to perform to your true talent.
That's called consistent.
Okay, but there's so many players.
Clutch is
who don't
specifically
do that.
Talking about a big moment. Clutch is not the low pressure.
I've read a lot about from like all these stat nerds saying how clutch isn't real and it's all just random and blah blah blah. And I don't agree with the fact that it's not real, but I do agree with the fact that it's random. So because it is random, you can't just look at 10 at bats with runners in scoring position to determine if a guy is clutch or not. Or you can't just look at one postseason series to decide if a guy is clutch is not. So when there's high leverage situations and pressure is on, over the course of a larger sample, are your numbers going to look the same as they do as they always are? Derek Jeter in the playoffs in his career, which was a huge sample, hit pretty much the exact same slash line as he did in the regular season in his career. To me, that's clutch. Derek Jeter was always going to be Derek Jeter, whether there's no pressure, whether there's high pressure, whether it's spring training, whether it's the World Series. He was going to be the same Derek Jeter. There's too many players who, when the moment is big, are nowhere to be found. But in the regular season, they're going to put up 45 home runs.
Right.
So I think clutch could work in the opposite way.
To me, that's the same.
It's a negative.
But it doesn't. That's not what it is. Why? How are you?
To me,
how are you?
I had an epiphany.
How do you possibly make clutch negative? I don't really. This is a new level for you of going to a negativity on something that's absolutely
no. It can bring players down. Clutch moments can bring players down.
What? I don't understand what you're saying. Look,
a clutch moment is high pressure.
Yes.
And that can get
to
people. There's a human element in baseball.
That's the whole
right?
point of it.
If you're a 300 hitter.
That's the whole point of being clutch, is that moment you do well. You succeed in that moment. That's it.
Let me ask you
there's
a question.
You're either clutch or you're not clutch. That's the point.
If you're a 300 career regular season hitter, okay?
I don't care about the regular. None of that matters.
Let me ask the question.
But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. That's the whole point of it.
Can I just ask the question?
No, I don't want you to. The whole point of the regular season in a clutch moment means nothing. Everything
else. Why? There's high leverage situations in the regular season.
High leverage, but I'm talking about the numbers over a longer period of time. The clutch moments are specific moments in time when the pressure's high and these guys are seemingly able to keep their heart rate at a even keel. And
yeah,
maybe
to perform how they normally do. Perform better than they normally do.
That's not true.
That can happen.
There are people who don't perform well over a long period of time. There might be 230 hitters that come in and are able to lock it down in a big moment. And
hit 300? You're a 230 career hitter, in a clutch moment, you're hitting 300?
Again, I'm not looking at batting average in that moment. I'm looking for the big moments and what you're doing.
Okay, I'm using batting average as a way to just say you're coming through more than you normally do. In a clutch moment, you succeed a greater percentage of the time than you do in a non-clutch moment. To you, that's clutch? Because to me, that's random.
Say that again, because I don't understand what you just said. Say it again.
I'm using batting average as just a way to say it's a percentage of time you come through, right? So you come through at a greater percentage of time. So let's just use batting average as the example.
In those moments, in those big moments.
You hit 300 in those big moments, but your career batting average in the regular season is 230.
Okay.
You're calling that player clutch.
Yes.
Okay. I'm probably saying that going forward, from that moment forward, you should not expect that player to continue to come through at a 30% rate in those quote clutch moments.
Right, because you're a nerd. He's probably going to expecting him to come down to earth because of math.
Yeah,
right.
But if you're a 300 hitter in the regular season and you in clutch moments hit 300 or about 300, to me that is clutch.
That's a Hall of Famer. That's a consistent damn good player. And maybe that guy.
And the argument here is like, okay, if you're a 200 hitter and then in clutch moments you hit 200, are you clutch? No, you're just a shitty baseball player.
Yeah,
but exactly. if clutch elevates your game, then more power to you. That's probably not going to happen. But if in clutch moments you're the same guy as you always are, to me that's clutch. That's why I think Derek Jeter was a clutch player. And so you want to get to Aaron Judge's numbers now?
Oh my God. I can't even.
This is another example. I think people are going to say you two morons are saying the same thing.
I don't even know
what you're saying. We're saying the same thing. Saying it in the old school eye test way.
No.
I'm saying it in the new school statistics way.
No.
We're saying the same thing.
No, we're not, because you're talking about a player being consistent throughout and that being clutch. What I'm saying is I don't care what they've done in the past. In a moment, in a big moment, when the pressure is on, when there are 50,000 people screaming in their faces, I don't care what they've done. If they can perform in a moment like that more times than not, then I can deem you clutch. And that's how I deem Didi. That's it. That's all I care about. I don't care about what they've done in the past in that moment for a person to be clutch. That's it.
So for Aaron Judge and even Robin in his email, you can kind of tell he doesn't really buy these batting averages in these situations because they're small samples. 118 players.
That's the problem.
You can't find
a big sample size for these clutch moments unless you're looking at a guy like Derek Jeter who was in the postseason every single year and went deep all the time.
28 plate appearances in extra innings. Just throw that out. That's nothing.
Right.
But in high leverage situations, Aaron Judge in his career, 134 plate appearances, a little bit bigger sample, 117 WRC plus. So 17% better than league average. Not fantastic by any means, but still better than league average. And career men in scoring position, which a lot of people call clutch, even though you can have bases loaded in a 10-run game, so that's not really a clutch situation.
That's why you can't look at the stats, and you have to look at what the moments
were. Okay, but men in scoring position, 405 plate appearances, and a 133 WRC plus, 33% better than league average.
You just gave the exact reason why you can't always look at stats when you're talking about a person who was clutch. You got to look at what they've done in that situation.
You could still look at stats, but you have to take them in context. So I'm giving some context to these stats.
All right, don't look at any stats. Is DJ LeMahieu clutch?
Yeah, because I'm confident.
You're goddamn right he is.
Because I'm confident that DJ LeMahieu, in a quote clutch moment, is going to perform the way that DJ LeMahieu always performs, which is a good baseball player. So, what's your verdict on Aaron Judge? Clutch or not clutch? Or is the verdict still out?
I mean,
will Aaron Judge's career? This is a different question.
I trust
Aaron Judge's career. Will Aaron Judge's career and how we look at him ultimately depend on performing better than he has in the playoffs to date? Because he's not had great playoffs. He did pretty good against the Red Sox in the 2018 playoffs, but that was just one series and the Yankees lost. 2017 playoff run, 2019 playoff run, Aaron Judge was not good. He struck out a ton.
Look, I do think we need more sample size. We need to see him in the first of all, I want that man to be healthy and to be in the playoffs and to be in those moments so that we can do it, because I trust him. I do trust him in moments like that. I do believe that he's going to, and maybe it's just because I have a ton of confidence on a guy like Aaron Judge. He just hasn't given me much to, he hasn't given you the side that A-Rod did, where he would just go through long streaks of just sucking in the postseason. I don't see that from a guy like Aaron Judge. Mike Stanton, Giancarlo Stanton is a guy that has not succeeded in moments. And when you're looking at that, you don't have the confidence that he's going to come through in a clutch moments. Aaron Judge has never given me that feeling. So that's what I'll say about Aaron Judge. He's had some big hits.
Yeah. And A-Rod had that one great playoff run, but I'm not going to give you, you're not going to like his career high leverage, low leverage, medium leverage statistics. So I'm almost afraid to give them to you because it does not support your narrative. Okay. Let's move on to out of left field. We're gonna skip over a few mailbags, but don't worry, we will get to them on the next episode or an episode in the near future.
Find that out as Sanchez destroys that to left field.
There it goes, deep to left, really deep.
In the air to left field, back at the track, at the wall, we are tied.
I pissed on a public building.
Yeah. Scott. You ready for out of left field?
Out of left field. So let me like jog my memory of what I was bitching about earlier. Okay, so I remember what it was. We had the snapbacks that I designed and were kind of like a little pet project of mine, my baby. These snapbacks, I've put a lot of time and effort into them. We customized them. They look great. And they sold out. Everybody's getting them today, Monday, when you're listening. The majority of the people they're delivering today. So I'm excited for them to get in everybody's hands. The conversation on the back end, this was on Instagram. Carl, who's my arch nemesis, who if you have just listened to the show or you've listened for a while, if you need a refresh, Carl's the guy that I made a bet with about Sonny Gray a couple years back, about 20-game winner, blah, 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 blah. Nobody needs to remember the details about that. I will be shotgunning a beer at the Red Sox game in front of everybody, declaring Sonny Gray my daddy. That was the end of it. Now, this conversation went to him on the back end, bitching that it's not going to be a fitted hat. I was like, you know what, Carl? First of all, if you make a custom fitted hat in an operation like we have, every one of us all have full-time jobs. We do this as like a passion play. We spend a lot of time on this. Do you know how much inventory you have to hold if you're doing fitted hats for everybody?
Everyone has a different size head. There's like 1,000 different size hats, 7 3/4, 7 5/8, 7 whatever.
On a logistic side, impossible. Just
nightmare.
It's not going to happen. I'm not holding that much inventory. It's just not going to happen. Okay, so that's number one. So now we're talking about snapbacks and fitted hats. And I've always been a snapback guy. And I think snapbacks are like, you know, kind of like the Jordans. A part of culture that loves snapback hats, like people that love snapback hats. I think the same people, there's some, like you have some sneakerheads, you have people that get into like little niches of certain areas of culture and fashion and whatever. And you know, just the street culture, if you will. Snapbacks, I think, are in that moment. I've always worn snapbacks my entire life. I love them. I've been wearing them since like elementary school. So it's always been a thing. I used to wear the game hats all the time. Remember the game, with the little G on the back? That was the inspiration for the BP being in the location that it currently is. Yeah. The green underbill, again, a throwback to those hats I used to wear in middle school. And he's talking about fitted hats. So I started going on this whole tangent about fitted hats versus snapback hats. And he's a fitted guy. He doesn't like snapbacks. And we had to get into this whole thing about snapbacks and why they're better. And my big thing with fitted hats that I don't like, okay, and this became a little bit of a Festivus rant, is that fitted hats, I like to wear a hat forward and I like to wear a hat backwards. And if I have a fitted hat, I like to have a nice tight fit going forward. And when I wear my hat backwards, it's got to be a little looser. I don't know. My head doesn't change sizes. The way I wear it. It's the way it's fitted a little bit in the shape of the hat with the, the crown on the front. All of these depend. The circumference of the headband. A lot of things play into it. But when I wear a hat backwards, I wear it a little lower. So it's actually going just above my eyebrows, which I think is a larger diameter than on the top. And it doesn't fit right. So now I'm walking around with a fitted hat that fits great forward. But when I put it on backwards, my head is like, I get a headache. I get hot. It's tight. I don't like it. There's creases all over my head. And the other thing, fitted hats, wool or acrylic? You're not going to find a cotton fitted hat, are you?
Yeah, they're so hot.
They will shrink.
Just sweat. So it's middle of winter and you'll sweat.
You will sweat all the time. So you want to go to Yankee Stadium wearing a freaking, and everybody does it. Going, I don't understand it. I sweat like a pig.
You get the Yankee fitted.
I sweat like a pig, period. When I eat cinnamon gum, Indian food, hot day out,
cinnamon
I sweat.
Gum?
Yeah. I get a little brow sweat. I sweat. It's in my jeans. My father was a sweater. I was a sweater. My father's father was a sweater. But the thing is, the snapback hat gives you that customization, the ability to go one snap bigger, one snap smaller, and make it fit my head. And you know what? There's always a vent. Always. And it's
yeah,
cotton.
Because that's
it's
a built-in air conditioner. It's amazing.
So to me, there's no question that snapbacks are by far superior to fitted hats.
I'm going to tweet out a poll right now from at Yankees Podcast. It's going to say, what do you prefer, fitted or snapbacks? And we'll see what the masses say. But it is amazing.
I think you will get the majority of people saying fitted hats.
Okay, we'll see. It is amazing what people will argue about. Just take a stance on. It's like everything's black or white on Twitter. There's no gray area.
I'm going to read this conversation quickly with Carl in the back and how it eventually went down. Because I got tired of trying to explain myself over a DM. So I was like, this is now a podcast. This is now a segment on the podcast. So let me find it first. But yeah, it's definitely one of those things that you should have an opinion on. Because if you're a hat guy, it's a big deal. And it makes a big difference on how you wear the hat and how it fits and how it feels. So. Something while I find this.
Snapback, one word.
That's a debate too, actually. I've seen
I
it both
typed
ways.
It and I typed it two words. So I don't want to get yelled at on Twitter. But
I'll even make the capital B the B capital. Just
Do you know how? Okay, no, that's weird. You were saying, oh, my head doesn't change sizes, but there'll be sometimes I'll put on my snapback. And whatever setting I had it on before, I'm like, oh, this just feels tight today for whatever reason. So I'll loosen it up. Some days I like it a little looser. Some days I like it a little tighter. Can't do that with a fitted hat.
So I put out an Instagram.
Like the flexibility.
Yeah. And that's why the flex fit exists as well. And to me, that one doesn't fit my head. Like if it's
fitted with an early lead, Scott.
It fits well backwards, but it doesn't fit well forward. Personal preference here. All right, so the conversation started with him replying to an Instagram story that I put out talking about the snapbacks that they were existing. He said, what about a pro fit? I said, snapback, baby. I am messing with all that inventory for different sizes. He said, that's silly. Well, you know what, Carl? Plus, never been a
fit. You said Carl with such disdain and anger.
never been a fitted guy. Snapbacks are king, Carl. I'm the opposite. I said, shocking. Shocking, Carl. Fitted hats look cleaner and more professional. You don't see pros with snapbacks on. I said, Carl, you are not a pro. and honestly, jokes aside, the inventory is daunting with the fitted snapbacks. I have a good following that I am part of, purely selfish reasons. I designed the hat. I made the hat. I wanted a snapback. Plus fitted hats, they either fit well backwards or forward, never both. And I've always hated that. Plus, again, the wool acrylic and cotton thing, you know, that was the conversation. And that's what set this off. So, yeah, I want to know who my brothers are and my snapback brothers.
Yeah,
I'm not worried about the fitted people.
Yeah, if you have an opinion on this, which I'm sure you do because that's the internet today, go vote on the Yankees podcast poll, snapback or fitted. I would vote snapback, you would vote snapback, but fitted is currently leading after like 25 votes.
I expect fitted to win.
Doesn't make it right, though.
Nope, doesn't. Not going to change my mind.
All right, that's going to...
Change my mind. Ain't gonna happen.
That's gonna do it for this episode. Thank you guys for the mailbag questions. We're going to get to some questions I skipped over one from Tim and then one from Steph as well, who asked a really interesting question about sort of constructing a statistical lineup, which is going to take a while, and we got to run. So we'll get into that in an episode or two down the road. Any last words?
No, I hope everybody has a Merry Christmas, like you said in the beginning, a Happy Festivus, a Happy Hanukkah, all of the above. I think everybody should be celebrating with their family and friends and all that, drinking some good drinks, making plans to come to some BP Crew events.
Spring training is sold out
at this point. 187 people going to spring training. Crazy.
I mean, quick aside, that's friggin' awesome.
It is awesome.
Everyone who has bought a ticket, thank you guys. Scott and I went down to spring training for the first time 5 years ago, and it was just the two of us. And 5 years later, we can get 187 people to come to a spring training event. And I know they're not there for us specifically, but the community of the BP Crew has grown so much, and like, not everyone lives in Tampa. A lot of people are flying in for the weekend.
Yeah,
it's gonna be so much fun. March 14th,
gonna be fun.
Then
good times.
Then quickly, the regular season event, Saturday May 9th against the Red Sox, Saturday June 13th Trenton Thunder event, Friday June 26th against the Cubs, Saturday July 25th against the Red Sox, Saturday August 22nd against the Blue Jays. Mark those calendars. Yeah. Mark those dates in your calendars.
Talk it up with the family. Get the crew going, and let's add to this, because the other thing, keep your eye on the prize. We just got Gerrit Cole. What is it now? World Series or bust. The one thing that we're going to be doing with the BP Crew, the beautiful thing is that we get these tickets during the regular season. It allows us to obtain tickets for the playoffs and cost control them for people, so that people can actually go out and enjoy the game and not spend. It's still an insane amount of money, but not crazy like we saw. We can get some significant discounts if we all do this thing together, and it's working really well. So big incentive at the end of the year, and they're only going to BP Crew people. This year, I guarantee they'll all be sold out.
Sweet. Happy holidays, everybody. We'll talk to you in a few days.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.